And now for his perspective, we're joined by David Puhlman, veteran Microsoft beta tester and regular contributor to email lists in the blind community. David, welcome to Main Menu. We talked to you last time for the upgrade of Millennium, so you're obviously one of those brave people. Were you beta testing this time, or have you got the full release of Windows XP?
I was beta testing.
Okay. But you will be running the final code now, I guess.
Yeah, actually what I have right now is close to final code, I'm anticipating receiving the final code shortly.
Is it the home edition or the professional edition you're running?
I'm running home edition.
Okay. Tell me about it overall. I mean, if I just said to you, what are your impressions of Windows XP? You like it or you don't like it?
Overall, I like it. It has a rich set of features that people who use Windows 2000 may be used to. And it has more ways to do things than the previous home operating systems products from Microsoft.
It may be too early to ask you this question, but have you found it more stable than previous operating systems you've run?
I'm not sure if it's too early or if it will change. I don't see a major difference in stability. It's slower, but you know that's got little to do with stability. But I don't get a whole lot of crashes when I'm not trying to crash a computer. So I can't really give you anything terribly definite on that.
Because one of the things that people with the 9X operating systems find and complain about is that if they run a lot of applications and close them and run some more, gradually your system is going to start to slow down. And, for example, if you're running Winamp or some music player, you get stuttering that starts to creep in, and inevitably you're going to have to reboot. And there are claims that XP really avoids all of those problems, that you can keep it up and running for months.
Well, the Windows 2000 kernel is reputed to be more stable generally, and since XP, both home and pro, and all the other flavors are running on the 2K engine, I think that there will be some noticeable improvements. I'm not certain, though, how much effect screen readers have on the stability of an operating system when they're thrown into the mix because of the things they have to do that that people who don't run screen readers don't need. So I have heard a lot of good things about the stability of XP, but I've also heard contrary things too during the last year, and it seems to depend on what you want to do with it, how many applications you want to run at one time, and a lot of other variables. And the experiences seem to range widely.
You made the comment that it's slower, and of course there are all sorts of claims from Microsoft that in fact it's faster. What kind of box are you running it on?
I'm running it, and this may have something to do with it. I'm running it on a Dell Optiplex GX1 350 megahertz Pentium 2 with 64 megabytes of RAM and 4.5 gigabyte hard drive.
Right.
And, you know, that's a tight squeeze for XP, even the home edition.
Yeah, it'd just be meeting the minimum specs with that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I have not, since I upgraded, I haven't gone in and taken out a lot of the activities that, you know, that I won't need to use, which may speed it up. And the drive that it's on is it the partition that it's running on, is it just under 2 gig, and there's about 800 megabytes left over on the partition for the page file. So it may, you know, it may just be a little cramped, you know, under those circumstances. And, of course, we're not finished with the, you know, with the final, you know, the final solution for everything. So it's going to be a little while to, you know, before I can actually say, well, it's running slower or faster. Right now it's running, you know, for me it's running kind of slow.
The upgrade process from Millennium to Windows XP, how speech-friendly is that process?
You have... There are two ends of friendliness. One end is, in the beginning, you can use a screen reader to type in your serial number, your product key, and you can use a screen reader to go through, you know, the initial dialogues. And if you want to upgrade, you don't really have to do much else but press enter after, you know, entering your product key. Then it reboots for a little while. It took about an hour and 10 minutes or so for mine to complete, and it reboots a couple, three times, and then comes up and music starts playing. And these little thingies start dancing around the screen, you know, pictures and all that. And so little videos, just, well, you know, all this welcome to Windows experience and the out-of-the-box experience and all that wonderful stuff. And at that point, you can run Narrator, which is the sort of skeleton screen reader for Windows XP, and also it's available in 2000. And you can complete the activation or install your assistive software at that point, you know, using speech. And Narrator does a really good job performing a lot of those basic things that you need to perform in getting, you know, things set up. You can actually go into, if you want to, before you set up your screen reader, install your screen reader, you can actually go into the control panel into folder options and do the tweaks that you want to do if you want to do anything before you you set up your screen reader. Or you can wait until after you install your screen reader and do it then.
Now, that's good, because there was some discussion about whether Narrator was going to be in the Home Edition. It most definitely is, because you're running it. How good is it? I mean, what kind of access do you get when you're running it?
It's quite basic. It allows you to work in Notepad, WordPad. It gives you the same kind of functionality in IE that you would get without the virtual cursor in JAWS. For example, you can tab through links, and you can activate buttons and fill in forms and things like that on pages if they're not terribly complex. You can run installers and answer the questions, and, you know, deal with the dialog box in Windows Installer. And you can do most of what you need to do in Control Panel. You can set your folder options, you can set your display options, and it handles some things better than JAWS used to handle some things, like some of the slider controls are more understandable, more intelligible with Narrator. You can also set its pitch and rate and volume. Right now, and I don't know if this is going to change, it only has one voice, Microsoft Sam, but you can change everything else.
Now, does that get installed by default?
It did for me on the upgrade. There was a time during the beta process when I had to add it if I wanted to use it. But apparently they listened to us and put it in the upgrade. As a matter of fact, if you, one of the nice things about XP, and I think 2000 allows this too, is that you can elect to install XP in a different partition on your hard drive. Narrator doesn't speak through all of that process, but it will speak. Once that's been accomplished, I think that they are putting it in the final code for the Home Edition as well as the Pro.
So just to be clear about that, does that mean that the Windows XP installer can actually create a new partition for you without damaging any existing data?
No. What the XP installer will do is it will ask you if you want to perform an upgrade or a new install. And if you say you want to do a new install, if you have additional partitions on your drive, it'll list them and give you the opportunity to select one of them. You can select, the partition that Windows is already installed in, or you can select, any of the other partitions that you have. And it will ask you, it will tell you that it's going to overwrite anything, reformat the partition and overwrite. And it also gives you an opportunity to select the type of format you want. And you can select FAT, FAT32, or NTFS. One of the things I wanted to mention that I noticed about the upgrade is that virtually all of my previous Millennium settings were kept. And that was pretty amazing. The only things I had to change were new things that were added, that didn't exist prior to Millennium. I will caution you that if you upgrade, you may be surprised to find that your inbox has no messages in it until you download messages. But what's nice about it is it does retain your inbox, like in Outlook Express. It does retain your inbox, but what it does is it renames that folder. It calls the new folder Outlook EXPRS and renames the old one, or keeps the existing name for the old one as Outlook Express. So if you go into your local folder with your name on it and find that, you can find those messages. You can import your inbox if you want to. If you're like me, you have some messages in your inbox that you're saving to work on later. Or you can always do a backup before you do the upgrade, which is the wisest thing to do.
Oh, is that because of the increased support for multiple users that XP offers that they had to redo the structure?
Yes, I think that has something to do with it. But if you're the only user on a machine, and you're upgrading, it'll pick that up. And I think part of the reason that it sets up brand new folders is because there may not be a way to intelligently determine how old the other folders are, or what mail program they're coming from, or whatever. I'm not real sure, but it did work out. I was pleased.
Did it give you any warnings when you did the upgrade about compatibility issues with hardware or software?
There is an option that you can select. And there are two things that are different about upgrading to XP and upgrading to Millennium that are very important and significant in a positive way. One is that it gives you an opportunity to find out how compatible what you have already is with XP. And when you get, when it finishes that, you can also find out more about the items on the list of hardware and software that are suspected not to be compatible. And you can also run this outside the install. You don't have to do the install to run this. There is a separate utility on the disk that you can run, and it will tell you what if any software and hardware is incompatible, and provide you with ways to get more information, whether or not you have to go to the website of the manufacturer, get updated drivers for the hardware, or a patch for the software, or whatever that will make it compatible. I had to change my virus, my antivirus program, because the one I was using was deemed to be incompatible. And although it didn't seem to be incompatible, even though I got a message when I was changing the configuration for it about not being able to run this build, it looked like it was doing it. But I said, well, I better be safe than sorry if I want virus protection. So I went and got another one, and that didn't give me any warnings or messages or anything like that. And the other significant development is when you install XP, you are given an opportunity to be provided with the latest tweaks to XP before you even install it, so that as you install it, you're installing the most up-to-date technology for XP that's available. And that's called dynamic download, and you know, it will go out to the internet, go out to Microsoft and get all the stuff that you need, and download it and put it into the mix for the install.
What's your perspective on product activation? How did that go for you, and did you find it a bother?
It's quite painless, and they give you 30 days to activate. If you don't want to activate, you know, during the install because you're so excited, you want to just get in there and play with it, or maybe you're having trouble with the interface for the activation, you can say skip it. And then there's a couple places in XP. One of them is in Control Panel, and another one is I can't remember where the other one is. I think it's in Settings that says Activate Windows, and you just click on that. You know, press enter on that, and it will go right out there, and it actually does it automatically without any intervention from you whatsoever, unless you choose to register. But, you know, if you say, no, I don't want to register now, I'll register later for .NET, then it just goes out and does it and comes back and says, okay, you're activated.
Now, when you talk about registering for .NET, that means getting a Microsoft passport if you don't have one, is that it?
They've converted all their passport stuff to what they're calling .NET, because they're going to be issuing .NET services.
Mm.
And so a .NET passport is the same as the Microsoft passport was. I'm doing everything with it that I did with the previous passport, including using MSN Messenger. It preserved all my contacts and everything, so...
You'd now be using the product called Windows Messenger.
Windows Messenger, yeah. Right.
What have you noticed that's different about that, if anything?
Windows Messenger has some additional functionality. You can now chat with more than one person at a time. You can use a camera with it, and apparently you can use speech with it. And you can also get rid of the extra options, hide them from view under the options menu. There's a checkbox that you can uncheck, or you know, to get rid of the sidebar.
Mm.
They call it the sidebar. But if you want to use them, they're there. And I have actually had an experience of being able to chat with two people at once, and it worked out fairly well.
So that's in text, is it?
Yes, that's in text.
Yeah. It sounds like then that actually the new MSN Messenger 4.5 for 9X is a very similar product to Windows Messenger for XP, which has just come out this week. It's a significant upgrade from 3.6 to 4.5, and that seems to be there. So that's good, because my understanding is that unless you have the 4.5 product, you won't be able to voice chat with people running Windows Messenger or MSN Messenger 4.5. It's not backward compatible.
Right.
All right. Other new features. I mean, when you've looked at this operating system now that it's up and running, is there anything that's made you think, yes, I'm really glad that I've got this?
There are some really nice things about XP for me. One of them is that I am allowed to really look under the hood of Windows and see exactly what's running. You can go to Services in Control Panel. It's called Administrative Tools. And you can go in there and you can bring up Services and you can see everything that's running on your computer. And you can decide whether or not you want to disable it or make it run manually or make it run automatically. And you can add services and so forth and so on and different, you know, and they will show up. There was a problem with add removes software, but I noticed yesterday in the upgrade that that seems to have been, you know, taken care of significantly, at least for people who are upgrading from 9X or Millennium. The problem was that I had to use the JAWS cursor a lot to press the change remove button and things like that. I don't have to do that anymore, and I don't know if that's due to upgrade in the assistive technology or upgrade in the way they've styled the software, the operating system interface for this application. The other thing I've noticed is that I've been recently having problems when I'm performing an activity and I go off to do something else and the activity finishes and all of a sudden I'm yanked out of where I am and stuck in a box where I have to deal with what finished. And I didn't like that. I'd rather just, you know, hear a sound or something and, you know, be able to go to it at my leisure. It seems that with the upgrade, that problem has disappeared. The people who upgrade also may find nice the new interface for downloading files. One thing it does is it resumes automatically, and the other thing that it does is instead of having a set of radio buttons that come up that say, you know, do you want to download this file or open it, it's a set of two buttons that you tab to. So you can tab to save. It highlights open, but you can tab to save and press enter, and it'll bring up your normal dialog box about where you want to save it and all that good stuff. So those are some of the things that I really, you know, that I'm really taken with.
I'm glad you like that feature. You know, in IE6, that feature of having to save to tab to the save button really annoys the heck out of me. But
Well, you see, some people like to be able to do that because they automatically would press enter and forget. But this one makes it more clear. When it comes up, it speaks, and it's a different thing. And a lot of people press enter, and next thing you know, they're opening something
exactly
from the net, and they'd rather not do that.
Mm.
So I kind of like the idea that you can tab to it. It's more like it's kind of more intuitive, I think. Yeah, it is kind of like nuts because you got to tab instead of down arrow for people who are used to that. But yeah, I guess you get used to what's there.
That's right. And what about some of the things that you're not impressed with? Is there anything that is annoying you about XP?
It's a lot of the things that, well, one thing that's very annoying to me, and this is probably not XP specific, but because we can now reach out and tap somebody on the shoulder and say, can you help me with a problem? Or somebody can come to us and say, can you help me with a problem electronically over the Internet? I'd like to be able to do that with this built-in feature. But unfortunately, if I'm the expert doing the assisting and I'm using assistive technology, I can't read the other person's screen and I can't do anything with their computer. I can see that I've connected to them and that there is a connection, and I can see the buttons to allow me to do this and do that, and, you know, I can say, yes, I want to do this, but that's about all I can do. So that's relatively annoying to me.
All right, this is the remote services feature. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, remote assistance.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. So it's not accessible?
It doesn't appear to be.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So it is possible for someone to perhaps connect to our PC if we trust them enough and get us out of a bind, but we can't reciprocate.
That's right.
Okay. Anything else?
I'll update you on that if I find out differently, but when I ran the test on it, that's the conclusion I came up with.
Are there security risks in that? I mean, how? What steps does one have to go through, for instance, to say, yes, I want this individual to be able to log onto my computer, and how much control do we have over what they're able to do once they get in there?
You have a lot of control. First of all, when you initiate a request, you can set a level of access for that response, and you can also set a time limit on that response. And that response, the initiation is done through email, and they click on a link in the email, and it opens your computer. Actually, there's a little file that they get in it as an attachment. And they download it and they run it, and it goes out and connects to your computer. And you can password protect it and give them a password if you want. So there is quite a bit of security, but like anything else, if somebody wants to abuse it bad enough, I'm sure they can.
Got to be a bit careful with that one then. Presumably you can uninstall the service entirely if you want to.
Yes. Well, the thing is that... people can't get in without that little file. So, it also, when it connects, when they initiate the response using the connecting application, you have to grant the access right there. So you can't be away from the PC. It'll come up and it'll say,
okay,
a connection has been requested by an expert to assist you with your problem. Do you want to accept or not? And you can say no.
All
or
right.
You cannot do anything because you're not there and they can't get in.
No, that's excellent. Any other things that are annoying you about XP so far?
Little annoyances. I'd like to be able to use XP out of the box, and this went for Millennium too, without having to do things like set my folders to classic and set my desktop to classic and all these other things that you got to do to use this stuff with a screen reader. I'd like to be able to use the themes that come with XP. There's a bunch of really cool things, and we have a 15-year-old around here who's very visual, and when he sees my boring screen, he's like, doesn't have any interest, but when he sits down and plays with it and looks at all the themes, I hear, wow, ooh, cool. I'm like, yeah, gee, well, I wish we could do that. So in that respect, that's probably about the only other thing that kind of bothers me about it.
And I guess, though, in terms of your 15-year-old, the very thorough support for multiple users that XP has, and it's certainly not half-baked support, means that he can set up his own profile and have it looking as glitzy as he wants.
It looks that way.
Yeah.
It looks as though if I were to share the computer with him that, what he would have and what I would have would be like night and day.
Which is nice. The degree to which you feel intruded upon by Microsoft, this is something that I've seen referred to in a number of articles. Some people consider it a big deal and others don't. The first is that you seem to be prompted quite frequently to get a passport or a .NET passport or whatever it's called now, if you don't have one already, and that there are concerns that by the time you've activated your product and got a passport and things, that you are actually sending quite a lot of personal data to Microsoft. What's your take on that?
Well, I can only say that if you believe the Microsoft policies, which are publicly available and very detailed in their descriptions, and they discuss at great length their respect for the privacy of the individual, then you're okay. I mean, the information is available. There are a number of things. I don't have a problem really. I've never had a problem giving a large corporation information to make it easier for me to do things. We do it all the time. We give out our social security number to the bank. We give out our social security number to the telephone company. We give personal information when we want to buy or rent a house or an apartment or buy a car. And that information has just as much of an opportunity to be exploited as Microsoft has of exploiting the information that they get from us. So from my personal perspective, I can't say whether or not they're doing what they're saying they're doing, because I have no proof either way. But even if they're not, I really don't know what what else I would do. If I want the services, I guess I have to pay the price. And if the services are available for free, then the price is that I give up, some of the information that they want. And I just have to hope that they stand by their policies. And I think Microsoft are intelligent enough to realize that there are strong laws, at least in this country, against breaking the rules that you yourself set. So if they say that they keep your information confidential and it's found out that they don't, they could be in big trouble. And Microsoft really doesn't want to be in big trouble, even though they've been in big trouble before. It's not a fun or healthy thing to be in. The publicity certainly doesn't help. That kind of publicity doesn't help.
So just to summarize, I'm a 9X or Millennium user, and I'm sort of on the brink. I'm not sure whether to upgrade or not. What are the factors that you think should determine whether upgrading is the right thing to do or not? And would you recommend it?
The first thing I would do if I were trying to decide whether or not to upgrade is there's a Microsoft website that you can go to that has a list of all the hardware and software that's compatible with XP. And I would take a look at that list and see what's compatible. If I find some of the things not on the list, I would follow the instructions on the list for tracking that stuff down. Like, I would say, well, okay, let me go to HP and see if they've got a new driver for my printer or whatever. That's one of the things I would do. I would also look at the system requirements. Do I have a system that require, that will meet the specs for XP delivery? I also go with the adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So if you're humming along fine, unless you're curious or interested or you just want to keep up with the Joneses or whatever, you might not want to go down the road of even exploring it, but let's say you are exploring it, you're saying, well, should I upgrade or not? These are the things to do. So you can do those two things. Take a look at your system, find out whether it meets the specs, take a look at the list, and if something you have is not on the compatibility list, chase down information about it. How badly do you need it? Can you swap it out for something that is on the compatibility list? And if you like what you see, you plan well and you're ready to go, I'd say go ahead and do it. One of the nice things, again, about XP is if you got a large enough hard drive and you have an extra partition that you've either created beforehand or was on your computer when you got it, that you can empty, you can dual boot it, test drive it, see if you like it. If you don't like it, of course, you were out $99 if you're getting the home edition, or $199 if you're getting Pro, but you could test drive it.
How easy is it to go back?
If you're upgrading, they do provide you with a rollback option. You have to provide about 200 megabytes of hard drive space to hold the rollback files. But it's relatively simple to go back. You just go to Control Panel and add, remove, and say uninstall Windows XP, and it'll roll back. Now, I don't know how successful it is because I haven't tested that.
Well, that's interesting, and I'm sure that people, as released versions or public beta versions of the screen reader start to hit the market, will be hearing a lot more about Windows XP, and I appreciate you taking us through it.
All right, I appreciate the opportunity, Jonathan.